Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kev Neva again. It's morning here in Vancouver, at least. Who knows what time it is where you are. I hope you're experiencing some incredible summer weather the same way that we are here in Vancouver. And I'm happy to have the chance to take a bit of a break from the outdoors and spend some time speaking with Dr. Martha Grayson, who is the Senior Associate Dean for Medical Education at Albert Einstein College of Medicine and a professor of clinical medicine there in New York, here in North America, in the United States. Welcome, Marty, to the podcast.
And thank you so much, Kevin, for allowing me to participate in my first podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure. Marty and I were just talking before we started, and I indicated this was my 51st, but typically the authors have been much more fluent at their first than I have, despite any experience that I've built up. So I'm glad you'll bear with me as we stumble along here. But as you know, the reason that I wanted the chance to talk to you today is about a paper that you have coming out in the October issue of Medical Education 2012, and it's entitled Payback Time, the Association of Debt and Income with Medical Student Career Choice. I presume your senior associate dean position is what makes this an issue for you. Has it been challenging to deal with and support students who are struggling with the debt load that they face?
Yes, this has actually been an ongoing concern that my collaborators and I have actually had over the years. We find students who enter medical school, they're all very interested in a career in primary care. They love the primary care rotations. They love continuity of care. They love going through that. And then something happens along the way. Reality sets in, and they become concerned about their debt. They become concerned about a need to support a family, and they're concerned to buy a house. And it's heartbreaking, but for some students, they feel that they actually have no choice but need to switch their choice of a specialty to one that's more financially rewarding.
Right. Maybe before we get into some of those details, I just realized I should ask you to step back a bit and tell some of the people outside the U.S. about the context within which you're working, the proportion of the healthcare system that's reliant on primary care and the debt that students would accumulate within your system.
So in the United States, more than 85% of medical students actually graduate with debt. And the figure that's been most recently reported is that the average debt is over $150,000 for our medical students, and that 30% of them actually have a debt that exceeds $200,000. And students have actually told me that they cannot afford to go into primary care with this crushing debt load. Since most students finance this debt by themselves, the actual amount that they will pay over the course of, let's say, 15 years could be as high as $350,000.
Well, just amazing numbers, and likely particularly startling to some of our listeners who would be coming from countries where the education is entirely subsidized and they wouldn't be graduating with any debt unless they've chosen to take some on for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of the intriguing things I found about your study, there have been a number of papers written, as you know better than I do, looking at specialty choice and looking at debt loads, but you had a chance to track people over time so you could look at how these opinions changed. What sort of factors were you considering in trying to decide what would influence change in their decision from early on to when they actually graduate?
So what we were able to do, we actually looked at over 2,500 students from two medical schools, one a private medical school in the greater New York City area and one a small public school in North Carolina, so two very different type of schools, and we looked at them for almost two decades. And what we were trying to look at was how much of an impact economic factors, both student debt and the income that students anticipating making, would affect their specialty choice, especially whether they wanted to go into primary care or a high-paying specialty. We were motivated to do this because the numbers of students in the United States entering primary care residencies and ultimately going out into primary care practice has dramatically decreased since we started the study in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
And since we in the United States are about to undergo healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act is set to go into place in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it's estimated that there will be an additional 30 million people who will now have access to health care. And that's a very good thing to be corrected. However, what this means that with all these new patients entering the health system, it's estimated that there will be a great shortage of physicians overall, a shortfall of more than 60,000, and that a large percentage of these will be frontline doctors, the primary care physicians.
Right. And so there are dramatic changes, and all the more reason why it's impressive and timely that you've been longitudinally able to follow up with these individuals from such a long time period. You mentioned that the proportion of individuals going into primary care has gone down over that almost 20-year period. Has that been mimicked very closely by increase in debt load over that time, or has the debt been largely consistent?
The debt load has dramatically increased over that 20-year period of time. There have been ebbs and flows in interest in primary care, but in essence, if you look at the longitudinal picture, the number of students entering primary care residency has dramatically decreased. And what has also happened is that even those who enter primary care residencies in the United States, a larger proportion of them are ultimately going on to subspecialize.
Is with the incoming Affordable Care Act, is that something that's likely to place greater pressure specifically on primary care? Or can you tell our listeners a bit more about how primary care is delivered within the U.S. health system?
So right now in the U.S. health system, there's about 950,000 physicians, and roughly a third of them currently are primary care physicians. National organizations have stated that we ideally should have at least 40% of our physicians practicing primary care. With the current distribution and with the choices of our medical students, it's predicted that two-thirds of the shortfall of physicians will actually be those who are primary care physicians. And I'd like to be clear what we mean when we talk about primary care physicians in the United States. There are three primary care specialties in the United States: general internal medicine, general pediatrics, and family medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And what our study did, which is somewhat unique, is that it compared two meaningful groups of students that have not been compared in prior research. They actually looked at all students who were planning to enter primary care, where a primary care physician has a mean income that is less than $200,000, and they compared it with 12 specialties which have a mean income that was $300,000 or higher. So incomes that were 50 to 100% more than primary care physicians. Those 12 specialties actually were orthopedics, radiology, nuclear medicine, anesthesiology, plastic surgery, urology, dermatology, otolaryngology, pathology, ophthalmology, general surgery, and the internal medicine subspecialties.
So the data you have suggests that, and in fact the comment that you made earlier about the heartbreaking nature of some of these cases suggests that people are feeling forced into some of those higher paying specialties because of the increased debt load. Is the preceding mechanism that there's high variability in individuals' financial status coming into medical school, and so some are less prone to taking on as much debt?
Well, actually, we looked at both sides of the economic equation. So we actually looked at not only their debt load, but also the income that they hoped to make when they graduated. And we, again, looked at 2,500 first-year medical students from two very, very different schools. First, in their first year at arrival to medical school, and then in their fourth year, just prior to graduation. And in almost all cases, we were able to survey the same student twice, both when they entered medical school and when they were about to leave. And we actually asked them four questions which got at these issues. One, we asked them how much debt they had. Two, we asked them how much they anticipated earning when they were out, roughly 5 years after they finished their training. Three, we asked them how much value they placed on income. Basically, how important is money to you in your decision? With questions like, is it important that your specialty provide an income to live comfortably by, adequately prepare for my family, and reward me for the years of training? And finally, we asked them what type of medical career they intended to pursue. We had a listing of 23 specialties, but for the purpose of this study, we compared the primary care specialties to the 12 high-paying specialties that I listed earlier.
Right. Is there any reason to believe that those who are more inclined to take on more debt, that's an indication of just the lifestyle that they're predisposed towards? Or is there some indication that these individuals who are feeling forced into the higher paying specialties are actually truly just led that way by the circumstances that they find themselves in?
I don't think that we can necessarily determine the other circumstances. There's certainly been a lot of research about the importance of lifestyle and income on medical student career choice. There has not yet, to my knowledge, been research on debt and lifestyle per se, directly correlating them, but certainly one would see how they could be related.
Right. I guess this is a big challenge, and you're describing any number of variables that need to be understood within this context. It's hard for me as someone who's not day-to-day having to worry about it to imagine what can change in this regard. The tuition presumably isn't going to go down over time. Do you see a way out of this? Do you see a strategy that schools might consider to put in place to try to make sure that they do enable those who want primary care to pursue that career?
Well, I think what we need to do is actually take a national perspective at looking at medical students' career choices. It roughly takes a decade to train doctors in the United States, and given the changes in healthcare and healthcare reform that's going to be implemented shortly, we need to act very quickly. It's truly a crisis, and we need a fundamental change in the way primary care physicians are compensated, because many patients will be having trouble finding a primary care physician that they can see within a reasonable period of time. So we need to pay attention to the factors that are driving medical students away from primary care, and that relates to both income and the increased concern about debt. So from a national perspective, we need to look at incentives to enter primary care. And there's a number of options that could exist, such as expanding debt forgiveness programs, providing additional scholarship money, increasing private and public funding for medical education that results in primary care careers, increasing reimbursement for primary care visits, and offering incentive pay to primary care physicians once they're on the job. There is some legislation currently being considered which could include some substantial corrections of specialty income.
That sounds like a really nice set of issues to end our conversation on, in that it's talking about some plausible strategies moving forward. Is there anything else that you'd like to say, Marty, with respect to your paper before we wrap up?
Well, I would also just like to take this opportunity to recognize my two collaborators for this study, Dr. Dale Newton from the Brody School of Medicine at East Carolina University, and Dr. Lori Foster Thompson from North Carolina State University, both in North Carolina.
Fantastic. I'll just remind our listeners that I've been speaking with Marty Grayson, professor and senior associate dean from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York, and we've been discussing a paper entitled Payback Time, the Association of Debt and Income with Medical Student Career Choice, that is going to be published in the October 2012 issue of Medical Education. Thanks again, Marty, for all your time, and congratulations on this extensive piece of work. I'll look forward to seeing how things continue to evolve.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.